Hey, hey, local legends. Welcome to the Why We Run podcast, hosted by me, John Barnes. Today's tale from the pack comes from Bryn Hughes, a father who has had to overcome every parent's worst nightmare and has used running to give so much back. This is his reason.
My name is Bryn Hughes. I am a 59-year-old non-runner, as they all say, because everyone says you're a non-runner. My running career, if you like, started in 2013. I'd never been into running as such. I'd always kept fit. I'd always gone to the gym every day. I'd always trained in karate and kept reasonably fit. And then in 2012, my daughter, she was a police officer in Manchester, and her and her colleague answered what turned out to be a bogus 999 call. Got to the house. As they approached the house, the person inside who was wanted for two murders, he came out and shot them both and killed them both instantly. So as you can imagine, my whole world turned upside down, inside out, back to front, you name it. Every emotion you can think of, every feeling you can think of, I probably experienced it in that first hour, if you like. So without going too much into that, myself and my close family have been helped by a couple of charities giving support, emotional support. And I looked at a way of how I could not repay them, but help them out for helping others, because obviously, you know, charities need support and they need money. And there were two charities in particular. The one that was the victim supporter and one was Police Benevolent Fund. And I looked at how I could raise money to help them. There was another charity involved as well, a police survivors charity. And I thought, what's the easiest way that people can raise money? And I thought, well, running's easy. Anyone can run. You put your trainers on and you can run. You don't have to overcome any fears of jumping out of the plane. I'm no good at baking cakes. Thought, what's the easiest thing you can do? You can run. I'm pretty fit. I'll smash it. Little known to me that it's not quite that easy at times. And I thought, well, to raise money and to raise money by running, you've got to go some distance. You've got to do a marathon. You know, I've done 10Ks in the past. Involved in karate, I've done 10Ks in bare feet along the road and raised money and things. And you thought, I need something big. I need something spectacular, if you like. And I looked at various marathons, ballots for London Marathon and everything else. And I thought, I need to do it pretty quick, actually. And I'd watched a program about 6 months before, a program called Ice Camp Barnea. And it was a 4-week documentary. And it was this camp up at the North Pole. 1 week, all these scientists go there and do scientific experiments. And the week after, the explorers pass by. And it's a bit like an hotel when people are trekking across the pole because it's spring, first week of spring. And then 1 week, there's these 50 midlife crisis, middle-aged men and women arrive by an airplane and run a marathon around the North Pole. And at the time, I thought, who the hell would want to go and run a marathon around the North Pole? And yeah, guess who ran it? Me. And I remember saying to my daughter at the time of the documentary, I said, did you see that? She went, what, why would you do that? Why would you want to do that? What reason could you think of to do that? And obviously, little been on to me that 6 months later, her death would give me that reason. So I contacted the organizer who was brilliant, gave me a place and trained for it, went up and ran 10 laps of the North Pole, 26.2 miles in temperatures ranging from minus 40 to minus 50. So that's my backstory, if you like.
That's one hell of an introduction to running, I suppose, Bryn. Just for myself, I remember the story when this all happened. I remember I was at home and I remember it all broke a bit, absolutely disgusted about it. So I just want to give a personal thank you for sharing and what you've done since the events and how you've benefited the charities is nothing short of incredible. I wanted to dig into that North Pole marathon then. How did you structure your training, or were you just quite stubborn and thought, I'll be able to get through this? Did you have a plan in place?
I think it was a bit of stubbornness. In my job, I was an operational manager in the prison service. So I'd always been quite like methodical and structured and planned things and contingency things and things like that. So I treated it like a project, if you like, doing that. You know, what do you need to do? Who do you need to contact? What training do you need to do? But there was also that element of emotional stubbornness. What drove me? The driving factor was the reason behind it rather than the planning, I suppose. I'm quite fortunate. Near where I live, there's a reservoir. There's a track around it and people walk around it. I took the kids around it years and years ago all the time. We'd always go around there. And it's 2.6 miles round, exactly. And I thought, 10 times round that? I could do that. And I went out the first week and I think I managed like a lap and a half. And I thought, no, things need to get serious. I think I need to eat right, train right, and buy some proper trainers, if you like, as well, and treat it seriously. I mean, because obviously you're looking at the probably the most extreme marathon in the world. You know, in temperature wise, you're looking at, I suppose, Marathon des Sables have been in the other extreme, but North Pole being that cold extreme. So I carried on training, and I was joined by a friend. He was running it with me, and we're raising money out training for the marathon. And then out of the blue, I contacted, I don't know why, I don't know who put me in touch with him, but I contacted Leeds Sport Science University and spoke to a guy there called Professor Ben Jones. They've got climate chamber. He was saying to me, you know, we can take it up to plus 50, and we can take it down to minus 25, and we've got a big treadmill in there. So part of the training was myself and my friend would go up to Leeds University 4 days a week for a month and spend a couple of hours in the climate chamber. And what they were doing, we had a couple of PhD students who had used us as a project. I'd like to think of a good catchy name, you know, from like sofa to 5K, but from sofa to the ice cap or something like that. So they were monitoring what we ate, what we drank, tests. We'd be wired up to machines and on treadmills, not just in the climate chamber, but outside. Some of the other students, we'd be monitored, heart monitored. So it was quite an in-depth and excellent research project for them and for us as well. We were even monitoring how much we drank and how much we peed in the climate chamber. So we'd go on a treadmill, and every 15 minutes, they'd open the door. They'd come in, they were dressed in Arctic gear, as you can imagine, at minus 25, and they'd prick our fingers, take blood. My hands were like a pin cushion at the end of each day. And they were monitoring our blood sugars and how we bites. And one of the good things from that was we soon realized that for your body to absorb like electrolytes and energy drinks, it needed to be warm because of the climate. So we're drinking isotonic drinks. We're mixing with hot water and getting used to that and drinking those. And you digested them quicker and you absorbed them quicker. So it was good for them. And then they'd see how much our blood spiked. So it was quite a really good, interesting research project. But it gave us that essential training for what we were prepared to do.
And Hugh, I believe when you were training for this, the court proceedings were happening, right?
Yes.
What did running do for you there? Was it a good form of escape? Because what I found, just to give you some background, that a lot of people I talk to, we, and myself included, we generally start running to get away from something.
Yeah.
And at some point in that process, you transition into going towards. So that escape at that time, what it gave to you, and potentially where you might have been had you not had that purpose or focus then.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it was a huge distraction, which I needed. I'd been in the prison service for 25 years, so I knew about court proceedings. I'd even spent a lot of time at the actual court where the trial was held. I knew the layout. I knew some of the staff there. The actual prison staff, what was on duty, I knew them because I'd worked with them previously. So I needed some distraction because otherwise I'd have been centered, I'd been focused on what was happening. You could get away from what was happening, don't get me wrong, but it would have been unhealthy for me to just focus on that and let it consume me for the 5 months that it went on. Because obviously you understand that, you know, you're listening to some horrendous details about the death of your daughter. It's something that, I mean, some people say it's your worst nightmares. You think, well, it's not your worst nightmare because you wouldn't even go there thinking about what would be my worst nightmare. That wouldn't even enter into your mind. Like I say, you're listening to some horrendous details and you're watching some CCTV and things. So you needed that distraction. At the end of every night, I could come home, put my trainers on, I could go out. And I've always said as well, when it's raining and when you're sweating, you can hide your tears as well, because you can be running down the street and people don't know how emotional you are as well if you're running that way. And not even listening to music, but just processing your thoughts. And I think for me, the biggest thing is about processing. And you need that distraction, not a comfort zone, but you need a mind-free zone that you can go into and you can run for however long you want or however short you want, fast or slow, and just be alone with what you, with your thoughts and what you're doing.
Yeah, I'll never pretend that I know what it was like to go through what you've been through, but I can resonate in certain ways. When I went through a divorce that I never saw coming, I signed up to the Brighton Marathon straight after to throw myself into something. My dad died of a sudden heart attack out of the blue. I signed up to a boxing fight. You know, yeah. You get those distractions. What I'd love to hear from you is, once you finished the North Pole Marathon, what made you continue and not just think, right, I've done that, that's enough for me?
I think I decided before that, obviously, because I was training for 12 months for that marathon, because obviously I couldn't train normally. And to be honest, I've never followed a marathon plan. I've downloaded hundreds of marathon plans. I've looked at them and I thought, yeah, I'll follow that. And I never do. But I think I decided beforehand to say, I want to continue with this. And the organizer who organizes North Pole, he also does an event, 7 marathons on 7 continents. And I thought, I'd love to do that. So I suppose I carried on from there. I'd already decided once I was over the finish line, You'll know yourself, if you're running a marathon and you're absolutely exhausted and you get to mile 25 and you think, oh, never again. Whose idea was this? And the minute you get over that finish line and they put the medal round your neck, it's almost like an injection of energy. And you think, yes, when's the next one? Sign me up.
And how has your reason evolved since that first marathon? It was a great form of escape initially. Then you were in right at that point. You were a runner, as much as you say you're not.
Yeah,
I'm not a runner. You were a runner at that point. How did your reason change then in the subsequent years after that?
I think by this time, or just before we'd gone to the North Pole, we'd started to establish a charity in Nicola's name. North Pole raised £250,000. And then I thought, this has got legs, this. And I can continue to help people. And that's what changed everything, I think. Like I said at the beginning, I'll never, ever jump out of the plane. I'll never do anything else like that, but I can run. So that was my decision, that to say, yes, this is what we're going to do. We're going to establish a charity. We're going to help children of murder victims. And I'm going to continue what I'm doing. So I think my whole attitude and approach changed during that final month or two. And I think it was helped along as well. If I hadn't have established a charity, I'd have probably done a couple more marathons. But I think I'd have had no driving factor behind me to do it. The added bonus, if you like, is having the charity. And I think once you've done that, you can't step away from it. Not that I'd be seen as a failure, but I think there's no going back now.
That was what I was going to ask you. So when times get really tough in a race, the marathon, mile 18, 19, the hard times, is it that external motivation that just keeps you going? You're doing good, you're helping others. Do you think like you could ever be stopped when you have that strong purpose for you?
I just ran New York again in November, just gone. And that was the hottest New York marathon on record, apparently. And I got to mile 18, the cramps coming in, the temperature, I think it peaked at 91 degrees. And another once at mile 18, mile 19. And I think, I can't do this. I can't give up. I thought, even if I crawl it, I'm going to finish. So it's never, the doubts have never crept in that I'm never going to finish. The pain's crept in, obviously, the exhaustion's crept in, but there's never been a doubt where I think, no, I can't do this, I can't finish, I'm going to give up. So I suppose subconsciously, I think, yeah, this is why I'm doing it. I'm doing it for a reason. All our team who run with us, we've all got our own branded tops with Nicola's name on the back, and that gets shouted out by people. I've had people call me Nicola and the crowds, go Nicola, and that gets you. That really does get you. You hear Nicola's name and you think, oh, but they're referring to me. And I've started to put my name on the front now, so they shout my name as well. But looking back, that's what drives you through it. There's no way of giving up because of what you're doing.
And how did your family feel? I guess I'm talking about the North Pole event when there was so much happening. But how did they feel about you signing up to these events, the commitment that you have to put in? Are they fully behind? Or did it take a bit convincing?
My son wishes now, he wishes he would have joined me at the North Pole. And obviously at the time it was too soon for him because he was 20 years old. He was going through a lot. He just lost his sister. For the best will in the world, he was only 20. He didn't have the experience and the tools to deal with and process what we as adults, if you like. I mean, I know he was adult at 20, but it's one of those things. But he was so supportive. He trained me a few times. And like I say, he regrets, I suppose, now not being able to do it with me. I'm still trying to convince him to run one with me. My second ex-wife at the time, now, she thought I was crazy, but I think we'll leave that where it is. Nicola's mum, although we were divorced, she thought I was mad as a box of frogs to do it, obviously because it's our daughter's name. And my mum at the time, I lost my mum a couple of years ago, my mum at the time as well, I think she was more worried that I was going to get frostbite and be cold. And make sure you put a pullover on, won't you?
Were there any injuries when you were at the North Pole with any of the other competitors?
They can only take 50 people because of logistics. So, I mean, interestingly enough, I think there's more people stood on the summit of Everest in 1 year than have actually completed the North Pole Marathon. So it's quite an exclusive club, to be honest. But there was one guy, he was hypothermic, had to be put in a heated sleeping bag and withdrawn from the race. And I think his core temperature were down to about 30, I remember the doctor saying, because you're doing laps and there's a tent, like a mess tent, if you like. And it only holds about 20, 30 people, but to get a drink and to change your balaclavas frozen solid to your head because of sweat. You get a drink, you've got to go into the tent. So you see these things happening. And so I think sometimes that was a bit discouraging when you see some guy being put in a sleeping bag to warm up. You can hear the doctors talking and his core temperature's dropping. You think, and interestingly enough, and all, it's the only marathon in the world that has armed polar bear guards. And there's three or four guards around the route, stood on ice shelves with rifles in case a polar bear wanders in and thinks, I know, I'll snack on a runner.
God, that would keep you going, wouldn't it?
Well, interestingly enough, I mean, one of the things, I think it got to about lap 7, which would have been round about mile 18 or something like that, 19. And I think when you hit that wall and all the doubts come flooding in at the time, obviously the first marathon I'd ever run, I was feeling it a bit, not just physically, but mentally as well. There was an ice shelf. You're running on the Arctic Ocean, which is frozen. And there was a guard used to stand on there as you went past. And by the time I was passing, obviously the time had gone on. And he must have gone in for a break or something. And I thought, if I go behind the ice shelf and I take my jacket off, I lie down and everything's over. You're talking a survival time of about 10 minutes, if that. By the time they realised you hadn't come in on your next lap, you'd be gone. And I thought, yeah, you know, all the pain, all the agony, it'd all be over. There were two things that I suppose really stopped me from doing that. One was I heard Nicola's voice shouting to me, thought about my son. But we'd had a briefing in the camp and the camp commander's talking and he's talking about the ice cracks. What they were saying was the polar bear guards, they have a rifle, but they also carried something else. And they were saying, when they fire a warning shot for a polar bears ignore it because they think it's the ice cracking. So they had something else to go them off if they came. And I heard this crack behind me and I thought, oh no, it's a polar bear. And it, obviously, it was just like the ocean, the cracks, the waves underneath and things. And then I had this vision and I thought, oh no, I can imagine the front page of the newspapers. And I didn't mind if it said on the newspapers, father of PC Nicola Hughes dies of hypothermia at the North Pole. I wouldn't have minded that. But then I thought, no, if the alternative headline was father of PC Nicola Hughes eaten alive by a polar bear, I thought, no, I'd never live that down. So I carried on and I got through it. I got through the wall.
And if we look at all the events that you've done now since then, what have been your favourites and your highlights? What would you recommend to any of the listeners?
I mean, New York Marathon, fantastic. I mean, I've done New York three times. I'm just actually planning it again for this year. We have a very good relationship with our tour operator. I always take, I think the most I've taken in 2019 was 56 runners with us, all police officers. But, you know, we're open to anybody who wants to join us. But primarily, they tend to be police officers who are raising money for us. So like I say, we took 56 people in 19 with friends and family. There was 90 of us invaded New York that year. We did it in 2016. There's about 40 of us. We did it last November just gone. There was 36 runners and friends and family as well. So, and we have a really good relationship with NYPD Running Club. We get blue light escorts to the start of it. We get exclusive use of the compound when we get on Staten Island. I mean, if anyone's ever done New York Marathon, when you finish usually in Central Park, you've got about an half a mile walk to go and get your bag and everything else. We are number 310 as soon as you come over the finish line in NYPD Running Club. So we get looked after. You get a nice fleecy poncho around your shoulders and then you're blue light escorted back to the hotel for a party afterwards. So it makes the whole experience is fantastic for people who join us. So I think that's one of the biggest highlights for me. And it's probably the reason why I've been back three times. And I'm looking at going back a fourth time this year. So Berlin Marathon, again, there was nearly 40 of us running Berlin Marathon in 2021. And Manchester Marathon as well in 2021. I think there's about nearly 20 of us. And what I suppose I'm saying is the highlights for me, that camaraderie, that group of us, we've got a nucleus of people who carry on and come back year after year. We've got new people who drop in and drop out. There's always 20, 30, 40, 50 of us. So for me, it's that group belonging that the highlights of it. And I suppose it wouldn't matter which marathon I did. I'm not precious over a particular one for any reason, say it's a good route or there's no hills or it's flat or whatever. I think that'd be a bonus if it were flat. But I think it's just that belonging. The group of us, we live in our hoodies wherever we are, Berlin, Manchester, New York, and that's how we spot people. And seeing people doing that in Nicola's name, Nicola's memory, and raising money for the children that we do, I think that's the highlight for me, really, to be honest.
And I think that's a perfect segue then. I want to talk about the fund, purpose, how much you've raised, events that you're doing. Can you give the listeners a bit more detail on that?
When I looked at how we can help people, I looked at my son who was 20, not having an idea what to do. He's looking at me and I'm in that same position. I remember him saying to me, Dad, I don't know what to do. And I said, I don't know myself. We're not equipped for that. We never experienced it, which got to me thinking that. Obviously, as part of my previous job, I knew about crime figures and things. And 2/3 of murders in the UK, domestic murders, were more than likely dad killed mum. And I think on average, there's 650, 700 murders every year. So when you look at it, 2/3 of those was dad kills mum or one partner's killed the other. More often than not, there's one, two, three children left behind. And I thought, they've lost one parent and potentially they've lost another parent because dad's now in prison. And what can we do to help them? And I looked at, you know, various things that you could do. You're looking, you could send them on holiday. You could give them a gift talk or something like that. But at the end of the day, then they've still got to carry on with their life. All the dreams, all their aspirations, all the life goals have all disappeared, if you like. So we thought, what can we do to help them? So we established a charity that looks at practical things to help them. One of the biggest things, we pay for school uniform for children year on, year out. We buy IT equipment, iPads, laptops, so they can do homework. If they're off school for any reason, they can do homework so they can get back into school. We've paid for equine therapy for children. We've paid for drum therapy for children. We've paid for travel costs. Because what usually happens is those children then end up with my grandparents. So we paid for away days to scatter mum's or dad's ashes. We're paying for Duke of Edinburgh award schemes, clothing, so children can go on that. And they've got the proper gear. Because obviously finances would suffer if they're living with grandparents. Both parents have gone, finances suffer. So rather than having to make do, we'll pay for professional outdoor clothing. Recently we paid for outdoor clothing for a young child, well, a young teenager who's at agricultural college. And I got an email back from this teenager and they said to me, thanks very much. I won't look like the tramp in the class now. And you think of things like that and then the attitude of that is, and you think, it's worth it. It's worth the pain of running miles and miles and miles. So yeah, that's what we do. We look at how we can raise money for them, how we can help them. We pay for driving lessons for a teenager so they can get a job. So yeah, it's little things like that. And that's the practical things that we like to help them with. So I think over the last 8, nearly 9 years now, we've raised not far from £1 million and continue doing so as well. And we'll continue to help as many children as possible.
Yeah, it's so important. So many of these things that you wouldn't even think about, right? So what are the future plans for yourself then and the charity?
As it happened, just sent the link out for our marathon team and anyone else who wants to join us. We're running the US Marine Corps Marathon in Washington in October. I mean, you run the memorials around Washington and it's all staffed by the US Marines and they hand the water out, they hand the medals out. So that's quite a thing. We're in touch with Washington Police for a bit of a hospitality package, if you like. So we've got people signing up for that this morning, which I'm busy working on. I've also got people asking me, are we doing New York? And I'm thinking, oh, I can't say no. What can I do? I can't say no. I've got the Leeds Marathon. I've got the Edinburgh Marathon. I've got a thing called the Spine Race. I'm doing the summer sprint. It's 46 miles over 18 hours. There'll be no sprinting involved. So yeah, it's just continue to put things out. And I do a lot of, if family have had someone murdered, they're assigned what they call a family liaison officer from the police. These FLOs, to abbreviate it, obviously they train and they refresh them. So I go around the country as well, giving presentations to these various police forces at FLO training days. And on the back of that, then we get referrals from police officers who are involved with families of murder. So that continues as well. I try and get myself around as many places as possible. So yeah, it's quite a busy year. I'm quite worried that we're in the middle of March and I've not started properly training for the next marathon.
Yeah, we'll have to talk afterwards about the Marines one in Washington, October. So I'm across in Canada in October doing a special forces boot camp. So if I could tie it in with that marathon around it, depending on the dates, I'd be very keen to come.
Yeah, I'm part of our marathon club. And I always say the motto of our marathon club is once you're in, you can't leave. And we've got a police officer initially from Nottingham. She's a police officer in Calgary. And we've got an NYPD detective who joins us. She travels all over the world to join us as well. So there's always, if you're looking at things like that, I can always put you in touch and link up with people.
Definitely. One last question before I let you go. What advice would you give to those people looking to take that first step into running?
I'd say don't look for a reason to do it. If you look for a reason to do it, you probably come up with half a dozen. And then you may come up with another half a dozen not to do it. And I always say, what have you got to lose? And again, I'll reiterate what I'm saying. Don't look for a reason for it. Because once that reason's gone, you can be left with, hang on a minute, I only started running for this particular reason. So you've got to just, I think it's for your own sanity, your own health, your own well-being, your own appearance, everything else. I think there's lots of reasons that you can do. And just look at it for you. You see people and they'll run a marathon for a particular cause. And once you've done it, more often than not, they probably hang the trainers up, which is a shame, I think. I'm not sure if it's true, but the actual population of the world who have actually completed a marathon, I think it's like a really, really small percentage. And what would be really good is a small percentage would carry on. I think look for that reason in yourself. And once you've found it, stick with it. And, it's painful, but it's part of it, isn't it? It's that feeling of self-worth it gives you at the end of it.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point. In one of the recordings we've done, we were talking about Marathon des Sables entrants and how many of them just sign up for that event and get through that event and just stop.
I know someone who's done it. Yeah.
And you think it's one of the most fascinating events in the world. Once you did that, you think you just had the bug to carry on. But it's an amazing stat how many people just stop.
Yeah, I mean, there's a runner who completed the North Pole the year before me. She keeps trying to encourage me to sign up for the Marathon of Sandals, and I think, oh. But yeah, like you say, you know, when they just stop and you think, you've done that, and why? You know, the big marathons, I frame my medals and a picture of your running number, and it is capturing that feeling, and you can look at that and you can remember it in years to come. And I've got a picture running on the Arctic Ocean, and I look back at that and I think, wow, that was me. And you go back and they're happy memories. It's capturing that and continuing it, you know, do it, collect those memories. I try and encourage people as much as possible.
No, that's great, Brent. Thank you so much for your time. Before I let you go, we've just got some quick fire questions just to finish off. So are you ready?
I'm ready. Pen and paper ready.
So trail or road?
Oh, you can't say that. Where I live on the Pennines, it's a mixture of both. So I enjoy both. So I suppose road.
You can say both.
Road when it's winter, trail when it's summer.
Wind or rain?
Oh, wind any day.
Hot or cold?
Oh, well, that again, hot, I suppose.
Uphill or downhill?
Oh, I've got no choice. I live on the Pennines uphill.
Music or nature?
Oh, music.
Solo or group?
Prefer solo, but don't mind group.
And then when you're finished, cake or sweets?
Sweets.
Because they both or neither.
Well, no, I'm going for a period at the moment with cross buns.
Nice.
There's all these different flavours coming out, not just plain or cross buns. I'm going for a bit of a... I don't know. It's like, what do they call it? Craving. And I bought loads the other day, and I've got them in the freezer, I've got them in the cupboard, and I've different one, and I'm thinking, come on, hot cross bun, and protein shake. So yeah, hot cross bun.
Well, we're going into Easter now. It's a good time to get a hot cross bun.
Well, I've got enough to last until Christmas.
That's great. Thank you so much, Bryn. It's been lovely speaking to you. Thanks for taking the time out.
And local legends, if you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a like or follow on whatever platform you listen to. We'll be back next week with another inspiring tale from the pack. Happy trails all.